So I'd like to talk about work in progress with Walter Gille, who's also sitting in the audience, in case my pronunciation of his name's not the one you're familiar with. Now, well, you should ask him. There are three different approaches that the community at large and our experimental colleagues pursue for collider estimates of processes, in particular QCD and associated processes. There are general part-time level fixed order calculations. These are fully differential things where you've calculated some matrix elements to some fixed order at the moment really next to leading order, and the frontier at next to next to leading order. Theorists like them because you can calculate general observables. They're numerical programs, but they're also systematic to higher order and also to high multiplicity. On the other hand, they are part-time level programs, which means that you can only implement the JET algorithms approximately. You end up with two, or maybe in the next generation, three partons per JET, and that's a long ways from actually looking what a JET does at the Tevatron, let alone the LHC. So that means you can only match the detector on a statistical basis. So that's why experimenters don't really like these programs. There are parton shower programs, which again are numerical, and you can calculate general observables with them. But the long-standing ones, Herwig, Pythia, are leading or next to leading logs only. And they're only approximate as far as higher order and high multiplicity is concerned, high multiplicity of jets. The advantage, of course, is that you can add on hadronization, and then you can actually look at the detector response event by event. So experimenters like these programs, and theorists sort of look down on them, or at least some theorists do. Finally, I should also mention, and there are a couple of beautiful talks we've seen already, on semi-analytic calculations and resummations. I guess the resummations we'll see. And these are things which where you do a lot more work analytically, so it's in a sense harder work by at least the standards of Thomas Binot. And so you reserve them for specific high-value targets, high-value observables. And of course, they're valuable in that respect, and they're also going to be very valuable as checks on general fixed-order calculations. Now, the reason that people have been thinking about these issue of merging fixed-order parton showers is a number of problems with parton shower programs. They don't include higher-order corrections next to leading order or beyond. So you really have no access to precision physics. A somewhat more technical point is that they don't actually get the full soft logs right. And that means you have very limited access to observables that depend on so-called non-global logarithms, where the emission is restricted into part of the phase space. That's one of the reasons why you want to work on other sorts of resummation programs. And an even more basic point is that they don't include the correct wide-angle radiation. And that means you don't even get the leading order predictions right for multi-jet final states. And certainly things like W plus 4, W plus 5, W plus 6 jets are things you'd like to do for backgrounds to the top quark. And that's physics that's actually ongoing at the Tevatron. And there are lots of examples you can pull out at the LHC. And there are, in a sense, two aspects there. First of all, you get the wrong matrix elements for the emission, and secondly, there are also limits, artificial limits on the accessible phase space. So what you'd like to do is find an approach that combines the advantages of parton showers, that you can look, hadronize and look at them event by event in the detector, with the systematics that you have in the fixed order fully differential programs. Well, I decided to consult a fortune cookie, and it said, go for it. But if you go for it a little bit too naively, you discover that life is not that simple. This, is, of course, has been a long-standing problem for many years, and it's not because people are failing to be clever. It's because it's a hard problem. So let's think about studying NGET production at the collider or in decay, Z, wherever. So you might think about generating N hard partons and then just adding parton showers. Just take these as a starting point for the shower and turn on the machinery and let the computer compute. Problem is that you have double counting, and that's true even at tree level, because first of all, the hard partons that you generated initially might actually have a small Q squared. And on the other hand, the showers can generate hard radiation even if they don't do it everywhere in phase space and they don't necessarily have the right weight for it. If you want to go on beyond leading order in the fixed order sense, then you have more double counting problems because the virtual corrections are also partially accounted for in the showers, and at least in terms of the cancellation with the divergences that arise, the real integrations really do have to go all the way down into the infrared region. So in the last few years, there have been a number of advances on this subject, and I don't really want to go into them in detail, but there's work on matching to multi-jet configurations by Katani, Krauss, Kuhn, and Weber. And there the idea is you basically slice the phase space with a parameter into two different pieces. You then modify the matrix elements by Sitakoffs, and you subject the parton showers to Vito. There's also very nice work on incorporating virtual corrections, NLO corrections, into, in this case, Herwig by Stefano Friccione and Brian Weber. And what I'm going to talk about is a little bit closer to the spirit of what they're doing, which is namely to introduce a modified subtraction method. I think in both cases, these are not the last words on the subject, and so it's interesting maybe to take a fresh look at it, and that's what I'm going to do here. So if we look back, and one of the things I'm going to try to do is to explain how you can create a formalism that really meshes and, in a sense, is unified with the formalism you've been used to for fixed-order computations. If you go back, there's sort of two main ways of approaching it. The slicing, which is maybe a little bit less fashionable these days, and subtraction methods. And I think that one of the important lessons from the older slicing approach is that, first of all, you can write down general all-n formulae, and secondly, that the intelligent way to approach this problem is by trying to do everything in a Lorentz invariant fashion. So in the subtraction method, which the most popular and most recent version is due to Katani and Seymour, you basically take the exact matrix element, you subtract an approximation. The approximation is designed in such a way that it factorizes, and you can integrate the singular contributions. This is for the real emission. They then cancel against the singularities in the virtual contributions, and everything else that's left over is integrable numerically. It's finite in four dimensions. I should mention that I'm working in the language of a color decomposition. So you take an amplitude, you strip off the color, and everything I'm going to talk about is for the color-stripped, color-ordered amplitudes. Now, the ability to write down general programs at next to leading order is based on the universal factorizations. And again, the advantage of the color decomposition is precisely that the soft limit has a very simple factorization structure. The collinear limit, of course, this is in a sense just the Altarelli-Parisi factorization, and this is also the limit on which shower programs like Pythia and Herwig are based. And in a sense, the fact that they're not looking at the soft limit is responsible for part of the problems they have. One of the things that Katani and Seymour taught us is that it's a very good idea, even at next to leading order, where you can manage these limits separately, to actually unify them. And what they did is come up with a so-called dipole factorization method, where you're basically adding the soft limits to the collinear factorization. And so you now have a single function which captures all the singular limits together. And as I say, you get that at the level of the squared matrix element. You have, this is something that replaces both the Altarelli-Parisi and the Eichenholz factors, unifies them. And you can then build both E plus E minus and Hadron collider programs based on this method, using a subtraction method. At next to leading order, which is, of course, where the frontier is now, this unification is even more essential, in that otherwise you have lots of little different subregions and the boundaries between them would get very complicated. The subtraction terms and also the mixed real virtual ones emission from a one-loop diagram are now known, and there's also some of the integrals for them that are known. So what I want to talk about is using a formalism which is in some ways similar and in some ways a little bit different, a little bit easier to manage, but you can use it also for building fixed order programs, and what I want to show you here is how you can go ahead and build it into a parton shower. So the idea here is you combine the soft and the collinear limits. The slight difference with the Catani-Seymour is that here we can do it at the amplitude level. And instead of adding the sort of soft edges to the collinear limits, we're actually going to add collinear wings, if you like, to the soft core. So it's somehow the soft limit is what we're starting, which is ultimately the leading logs, and we're building stuff around that. And you can calculate the relevant factorization function in terms of the recursive currents, which are the same objects that you would use to calculate the tree-level amplitudes, either analytically or, if you're being sensible about it, numerically. Another feature is that we're going to have a remapping we're not going to build up a shower in a sense in 1 to 2 branchings, but we're going to build it up in 2 to 3 branchings. And so the inverse of that at the level here is to be able to take a set of massless momenta and remap them back into 2 massless momenta. So if you want to think about it pictorially, I'm starting, let's say, with 2 hard partons. There's a soft emission in between. I want to merge that limit with something where the singular emission is collinear with either of the 2 hard partons. And in that limit, I have a factorization whose general form is very similar to that of the collinear limit. So I have a hard process. In any singular limit, I have a sum over the intermediate helicities. There's a single factorization function and a leftover hard amplitude. And as I mentioned, the idea here is that you want to map 3 momenta in this reconstruction into 2 momenta. You can do that taking 3 massless momenta, or for that matter, 3 momenta where some are massive, and map them into 2 massless momenta. You can do this in a way where you conserve 4 momentum exactly. And there are certain technical constraints on the way you want to do it. It does also generalize to additional singular emissions. And what you reconstruct are precisely these A hat and B hat, which are on shell, they're massless partons. And when you go to the various limits, for example, in the soft limit, then when one becomes soft, then of course these reconstruction functions just reduce to the limits you all know. So in this case, the hard partons just go on. In the case where you have a collinear reconstruction, then one of the hard partons is just the sum of the 2 collinear guys, and the other one just goes along for the ride. So if you want to think about it concretely, then using the spinner helicity method, you can calculate these factorization functions at the amplitude level. You get an expression in terms of spinner products. If you now look at the separate limits, then you get the standard Eichenel amplitude or the standard splitting amplitude. For those of you who prefer to think about this in helicity summed squares, then you can write down this simple little object, one-line object, and which is of course just the square helicity sum of that thing. If you now take the soft limit, you get the standard Eichenel function. If you take one of the collinear limits, you just get the Altarelli-Parisi function. Now, as I mentioned, one of the nice aspects of the formalism is that it generalizes very readily to multiple singular emission. And you can, in fact, define an antenna for m singular emissions. Again, it turns out to be a product of 2 currents with the emissions distributed in all possible ways between those two currents, and the form of the factorization that you get is in fact the same essentially that we had for one singular emission. Namely, you have a sum over the intermediate helicities, and then you have an antenna amplitude, and then there's a surviving hard amplitude, which depends on the reconstructed momenta. And again, they're m plus 2 to 2 reconstruction functions, which generalize the 3 to 2 that I showed you explicitly. And at this point, we're ready to actually start thinking about multiple emission and to start thinking about showers. So we have in the perturbative level, let's say you have a Z is produced, decays into quarks. These quarks are moving very fast. They're going to radiate. You're going to generate some event with 10, 20, some large number of gluons and quarks. The LHC, it gets worse. You're going to have 50 or so. And of course, you don't actually want to calculate the matrix element for that, certainly not to arbitrary order in perturbation theory. But you know that the leading logarithms are going to come from the region where there's near singular radiation. And so the first thing we should do is approximate the matrix element for a large number of emissions. Now, in the conventional parton shower programs, where you start is you have, let's say, some 2 to 2 scattering process. You start approximating at that level. And that's, of course, where you get into trouble in terms of the wide angle emission, in terms of the let's say, a 3 jet process. You're trying to simulate that by having the third jet correspond to a collinear emission. Here, what we're going to do instead is not start at the 2 to 2, but start at the endpoint process. So we have some number of emissions beyond the n jets. We're going to approximate them by an antenna amplitude. And ultimately, what this is going to correspond to, of course, is building up the structure of the jet as well as the interjet radiation. Now, beyond the fact that it's singular radiation, of course, the leading logs we know come from strongly ordered emission. It's characteristically, for example, where the emission of a second gluon is much softer than the emission of the first. And of course, you can think of that in terms of energy variables, and there's also regions where there's angular variables that become relevant. But as I mentioned earlier, it's useful to work in a manifestly Lorentz invariant form, and it's possible to do that. It's a somewhat complicated looking function, but the main important point is that it exists. These G's are Gram determinants, so they're determinants of matrices of dot products. And this quantity expresses the notion of strong ordering. And what happens in the strongly ordered limit is that you get a further factorization of the antenna amplitude. So we have here an antenna amplitude for the emission of two singular partons. And at this level, there's no particular assumption made about the ordering of their energies or angles or anything. But if you now look in the strongly ordered limit, where one is more singular in precisely the Lorentz invariant form that was specified in the previous transparency, then you find that you get, in fact, a nested antenna. So you can treat this problem as coming from the emission first of one singular gluon, and then this singular gluon, along with the modified parent gluon, now act as the antenna for the emission of an even more singular gluon. Now, I mentioned that the antenna functions can serve as subtraction terms in next to leading order, or the double emission in next to leading order. And that's essentially what we're going to do here. We're going to be using them as subtraction terms and then add them back in elsewhere in a way that I'll make clear. There are different ways to proceed, but it turns out that the best way to proceed here is to use each antenna in the region of phase space where it provides the best approximation. And roughly speaking, that's defined by the region where the middle parton, the singular parton that's emitted, is the softest. And again, you want to think of that in a Lorentz invariant language. So you define a discriminant variable, which I called P here, which is actually a product of two Lorentz invariants sharing a common momentum. And so basically a leg is going to be the softest in a process, in a color-ordered sense, when two invariants involving it are actually the smallest of the cyclic set of invariants that you can construct. And so you're then going to slice up phase space. And unlike the slicing that depends on an external parameter, here the slicing, in a sense, is natural. It matches with the structure of amplitudes that you're considering. So what we want to do is the following. We're computing some general observable. And we're going to start with the hard matrix elements for 2 through n emission, and we're going to start manipulating them. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to subtract the softest emission from the endpoint, and then we're going to add it back in to the lower order term, to the term with an minus 1. And we're going to keep on doing that all the way down to n equals 2. And this object is now something which at the leading log level is actually has a finite limit as an object. So you can take if you've taken the softest gluon and you've subtracted it out. Of course, I haven't really done anything. I just reshuffled the pieces. Then this is something where if you're integrating that, then at leading log level, it's actually a finite term. Now what we're going to do is take the n partons. So we've started with some arbitrary number of partons, and we've approximated the radiation beyond n by these sequence of antenna amplitudes. We're going to add that back in to the n parton process. Every time we do that, we're also going to subtract the corresponding approximation with m minus 1 partons and the softest parton of those m of the original m subtracted. So we're adding in something and we're subtracting, and then of course we're going to turn around and add that back in to the next one down. So we've added it, we've subtracted it from n, we've added it to n minus 1. And we go ahead and we subtract something else from the n minus 1, we add it into n minus 2. So we're adding and subtracting at the same time. And so we're basically reorganizing the pieces here. And so we're building up a matrix element. We're now summing over more and more radiation. We're going from n plus 1 to n plus 2 to n plus 3 and so on and so forth. Each time we're essentially getting another nested antenna or another antenna somewhere in a different color, original color antenna. And that means we're building up an approximation. So we have a sum basically from 2 to n of what's, in a sense, the hard matrix element. And we're adding on increasing numbers of antenna, nested antenna. And so ultimately, what we have is a set of hard matrix elements, if you like, multiplied by the sum over all nested antenna. So far, I've been talking about the pattern of real radiation here. And of course, if I were to actually try and integrate this, then each time there's a singular emission, there's a 1 over epsilon squared. So far, I've constructed some sum that actually has an essential singularity. Well, that's not a very good thing to do. But you have to include all the virtual corrections as well. And you can do that basically by knowing that unitarity will force a cancellation. So when you do that and you sum up all the orders, and you basically the way you do that is you show that the resulting object satisfies a certain differential equation. And of course, it will just produce a Sudikoff factor for you. And you'll get a Sudikoff factor, which has a form which is reminiscent of the forms, let's say, that you'd get for in Herwig. It's a little bit different in that here, instead of essentially an integral of an Altarelli-Parisi kernel, we have an integral over an antenna amplitude squared, so the helicity summed object that I showed you earlier. We're integrating it over the phase space for the singular emission with a certain constraint, and basically you're integrating it over all the hard regions, there are different choices you can make for your evolution variable. It turns out that a convenient one is the symmetric one that I've shown there. And one of the reasons it's convenient is that in the soft limit, it actually reduces to the transverse momentum squared. And that, in fact, happens to be the variable that's picked by another showering program called Ariadne. So you have an explicit form for the Sitakoff. And let me just go through in not too much detail how an actual program would work. So you have to generate hard events with somewhere between 2 and m partons weighted according to the weight shown there. And the unweighting between those you could perform by sort of multi-channel techniques if you chose to. You then have one of the antenna that's surviving here, that's the softest one in the sense that I described earlier. That fixes the starting scale for your evolution. You now, in the standard sort of way, pick a new scale according to the Sitakoff factor. And when you've picked that scale, you now have to generate a remapping. You have to generate an emission. And of course, you do that by remapping 2 to 3 instead of by remapping 1 to 2. And one of the advantages there is that, first of all, you can keep the partons massless exactly, and you can also conserve momentum exactly. You repeat this process, and the general outline here is exactly the way that that Herwig works, until you reach some cutoff scale of order 1 to 2 GeV, and then you would match on to a hadronization algorithm in the same way that that Herwig or Pythia do. And of course, we have all the color connection information since it's done in a color-ordered way. And before the chairman actually brings the guillotine down over my head, I'll put up my summary transparency. So I've shown you a way in which you can go ahead and fulfill what would be a long-standing request from experimenters, namely to combine higher-order matrix elements calculations here in the sense of high multiplicity. I haven't really had time to talk about it, but in fact, the same formalism you can also use to combine the parton showers with next to leading order calculations. There have been a number of proposals, other proposals in recent years, and I think this is an area which is going to see a lot of progress between now and LHC turn-on. And the formalism that I've shown you here has the opportunity to provide a uniform framework for addressing these issues. In particular, you can actually do the phase space exactly. You can allow for automatic, it has automatic momentum conservation and enforces massless partons at every stage of the shower. And at least for the single emission antenna should be enough to provide the leading and next to leading logs. And Walter and I are currently working on numerical programs, and let me just stop there.
Okay, so I want just to understand something. So you have this antenna that behave like some kind of subtracted tail terms at the amplitude level. Okay, so you said, okay, I'm going to use unitarity information, knowing that these poles are going to cancel against the poles coming from the virtual diagrams. Obviously, the first time, I'm sure you want to check by hand that you have this cancellation. So you will have to do some kind of integrals, maybe analytically and not numerically, as Thomas I would like, because you want to check exactly what's going on. How easy is to integrate over this antenna object?
I can show you in a second. Go back to the I didn't lose the signal, I turned it off. So this is the object that you need to integrate. And it's not on the transparency, but you have to integrate this over the dimensionally continued version of three parts on phase space with one theta function, which limits SA1 plus S1b to less than 1/2, or less than k squared over 2. That's the integral that you have to do in order to get the 1 over epsilon squares and 1 over epsilons that match the virtual corrections. And that's actually an integral you can do fairly trivially by hand. Of course, you could also do it numerically if you wanted to. And so at that level, in fact, the cancellation has been checked. The next level. Yes.
Next to leading order.
Next to leading order, that's, those are calculations which are underway. There, the analytic integrals are harder. But I should point out that the next to leading order antenna functions don't enter into a leading or next to leading log calculation. That would be a next to leading log, because it's down by 2 powers of a log.
Yeah, I think I missed where you put in the next to leading order virtual corrections, the finite part of those.
I didn't actually talk about that here. But what I've shown you here is how to match the parton showers to multi-jet configurations, getting the exact leading order matrix element. Where you would put that in, is over here. In a sense, what's happening is that the parton shower, or if you like, when you're doing the unitarity cancellations, you can separate the virtual corrections into two pieces, in some sense, the singular parts and the leftover finite parts. And the singular parts get eaten by they combine under unitarity with the singular parts of the real emission to give you the Sudikoff factor. And what's left behind, there's going to be some finite corrections that you need to add in here. And when you add in those finite terms, that would actually promote this to a next to leading order, something that would get the matching of the finite terms at next to leading order correct as well.
One last.
And I hope you could say a little more about how the phase space works here. So you start with a 2 to 4 process.
Right.
And then you add the antennae, which generate additional soft and collinear partons. But they're not exactly soft and collinear. They have some finite momenta. So then you have to do what's called here remapping. But that gets increasingly subtle as you go to large numbers of particles. Is there a general prescription?
No, because you're doing an exact remapping every time you're doing a 2 to 3 process. I mean, it's the 2 to 3 analog of generating phase space hierarchically, if you like. So you can do that transformation exactly.
As long as you
it's the matrix element. Where you're right is if I wanted to go to arbitrary subleading log, I would need to worry about the correlations between the different emissions, and then I would have to do the remapping from 2 to m exactly. Although again, it's not the phase space part of that. That's the subtle. That's the hard part. It's the matrix element. Mm-hmm. That's the hard part.
Are there regions of phase space that, for example, are only populated by having a 2 to 3 with 3 hard partons rather than just 2 to 2 with antennae emission?
This remapping work covers the entire three parton phase space.
Oh, so all approximations, however many hard partons, cover the entire n parton phase space?
Yes.
Okay.
From a phase space point of view, it's exact. Where it's not exact, where the approximations are being made is in the matrix element.
Okay. Well, let's thank David again.